to the 20 Minutes of Filler Podcast Origins 2017 edition. I am your host, Jason Kotarski, and I'm so glad to have you with us again. In the past, I've done Origins recaps where I get lots of interviews from the showroom floor, and I didn't do that this year. I was kind of busy at my own booth, and I really had another person that I really wanted to talk about with Origins, because my Origins experience would not be the same without this person. This is a person I've wanted to have on the podcast for quite some time, and we always spend quite a bit of time together at this show, and I look forward to that every year, and that is my friend, the one, the only, Chris Kopack. Hey, dude.
I don't think I can live up to that intro, so thanks for really selling me there.
Dude, no problem. I'm just telling how it is, man. I seriously look forward to you hanging out with you every year.
No, I agree with you. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
Hey, dude. Thank you for coming on. So let's just get into it, man. Let's talk about, like, overall impressions first. So did you enjoy your Origins Game Fair experience this year, Chris?
Yes, I did. Do you want me to rate it on a scale of some sorts?
Yeah, or just whatever scale really toots your fancy.
Let's see. I would give it probably a 3 out of 4.
3 out of 4?
Yeah, because cool. I feel like 4 is a range that most people don't use for rating, so
oh, yeah.
I think that's a good one, good fit.
Have you ever had a 4 Origins before?
Like, they like my first one started off as like a 2 out of 5. I'm going to switch it up just to mix things up. But it ended up as like a 4 or 5.
Okay.
Because my first one, I had absolutely no clue what I was doing. I had no idea where I was going. I actually, when I got to Columbus, I could not find the convention center. I was staying in the Hyatt, and I could not find the convention center.
And that's connected to the convention center for those who don't go, right? Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
It's literally connected. So there
is quite a learning curve to going to conventions. I just posted this thing on my Green Couch Games Facebook page this week about how my first big convention was 6 years ago, and I remember going to that and just having no idea what I was getting into and not knowing anybody, and now it's just like, oh yeah, I go to Origins and I know where things are and I can find my way around, and it feels very comfortable.
Yeah, not to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but this year was the first year where I was walking from my hotel to the vendor hall, and I got stopped multiple times by people who I hadn't caught up with yet. And normally I'm just like walking and it's just, I'm going from A to B, but this time it was like, oh, hey, how you doing? Good to see you again. And you know, that's what I think is the biggest benefit of going to like an Origins, or from what I've heard, like a BGG con is kind of the same kind of feel to it, where it's about reconnecting with the people that you haven't seen for in some cases a year, and it's just a really great opportunity to kind of hang out with those people that you don't get the chance to hang out with that often.
And then it's really amazing, like once you start to get to know some people, like in a place that is so spread out and there's so many people there, how easy it can be to like run into these familiar faces. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty awesome. I have never been to Board Game Geek Con. I would like to go to Board Game Geek Con someday, but it doesn't work out timing wise ever because I always have plans that weekend with my family, but
yeah.
And it's also Texas, so I got to fly there, and it's not as just a hop, skip and a jump anymore. Like, you know, Michigan to Ohio is not a big deal.
Yeah. My holdbacks are the flying part and the fact that I would probably have to ship everything back that I buy, because I don't think I could go to a con and not buy too much stuff. I don't think that's in my nature.
Right. You'd have to kind of initiate a relationship with a UPS store or something Dallas if that was the case.
Yeah, exactly. Can I get a commercial account? It's just me, but I do a lot of shipping.
Yeah, just send a truck over. It's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So this year, it for me, it was a good one. It was just it was a little more work oriented for me than it has in the past. Because as I get more and more games out there, and you know, kind of am doing this as a full time thing now with Green Couch Games, it's like it's tiring because I work all day at the booth, and then like at night, like really the thing I look forward to is like grabbing dinner with a friend that I don't get to see very often, and then maybe, you know, going back and playing games for a couple of hours. So games were played, though. You played a lot of games, didn't you, Chris?
Yeah, I think my total ended up being somewhere around 35, I think. And that's total play, so there were a few that got played multiple times. But, yeah, I surprised myself by the number of games I ended up playing this year.
That's pretty awesome. That's like, you know, on a four-day convention, that's almost 10 a day.
Yeah, yeah. And for my normal stats, that's like about 2 years worth.
Awesome. I probably played 6 or 7 games. And a couple prototypes. Those are games too, I guess, but they weren't published games.
I include prototypes.
You do.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah. So I got pretty close to 10-ish games. So let's talk about some of the highlights of games that like were new to you at Origins. And you know, we usually do talk about fillers on this show, but like we're gonna let that, you know, like. It's going to slip away for this episode because there's just so much going on. We can definitely talk about the fillers that we played, but, you know, other games are not off the table for this conversation. So what's one of your highlights?
I would say probably my overall highlight would be, it's a toss up. It's, Flip Ships or Sentient. They're both from Renegade Game Studios. Flip Ships is literally Space Invaders, the dexterity game.
Oh, man. I saw it on the table. It's gorgeous. I bought it because Renegade is awesome. And also because that cover art by Quan Chi Mariah is amazing.
Have you taken the box and flipped it upside down?
Yes, I have. And
see how it says Flip Ships? No matter which way up or down you have it.
Yes, that's brilliant. Seriously,
that's kind of a cool touch.
That's you pay the big money for that kind of thing. Yeah. So that's such a cool logo that you can read it both ways, and it's awesome. So you got to play it. I haven't played it yet. Mine's sitting on my table in front of me. So tell me about it.
I played it 1.5 times. The halftime was the first play, and we missed a very crucial rule that basically made the game never going to end. But yeah, I mean, it really is Space Invaders, the dexterity game, because you'll deal out a couple rows of cards that represent the aliens that are attacking, and then each player has a certain number of ships, which are just little cardboard discs, and then you'll either get it off the edge of the table, or there's a little wooden block that comes with the game that you can put your disc on, and then you just flick it kind of paper football style, almost. Like the rules say it has to flip up and like flip end over end for it to count. So you can't just like flick it and have it slide across. It has to literally go up and flip before it comes down. But as long as it lands on a piece of one of the enemy ships, it'll do damage to it. There's a lot to it. There's a lot more into it. Like there's a lot of variable player powers, and there's you're trying to defend a city, and there's a health point rating for the city, and as that drops, you'll get more and better ships unlocked. So as it gets harder, you get better ships to fight with. Nice. And then at the end of each round, you get rid of all the ships that you destroyed. And some of the ships have special abilities like shields, so they block attacks for everything around them, or they take 2 hits to take out, that kind of thing. So whatever you defeat goes off, and then everything else slides down Space Invader style. So some cards will move down one line, some will move down in 2 lines and push anything in front of them, and some will even just go until they hit something. So they can really skyrocket down the field. It's a really cool conceptual dexterity game. I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. That sounds like there's a lot more going on than what I just saw. And I'm sure I figured there would be more than just like flip a disc and hit a ship.
Right, yeah.
But like, I mean, that core in itself seems like it's really fun. So I happen to like games where you flip discs. I may have had my hand in one of those. So
yeah,
we'll call Flip Ships Frog Flip Extreme. That'll be
there. There you go. Frog Flip in Space.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Frogs in Space. I love it.
There you go. There you go.
Very cool.
Yeah, and the other one was Sentient, also from Renegade. That one's a real nice thinky puzzler kind of game. It's kind of difficult to describe concisely, but basically it's a little bit of Area Majority. It's a little bit of dice manipulation. Not so much the rolling, but the manipulating of the values, and there's some set collection, and it's one of those games where you feel like you're spinning plates, basically. Like, you can do, if you do this action, it'll help you in one area, but then it'll potentially hurt you in another. So you have to kind of find ways to mitigate the bad effects, and it's all centered around, you've got five dice, and you're playing cards in between those pairs of dice, and the cards have requirements on them. So, like, both dice on either side have to be odd, or the sum of both dice need to be greater than 10, or whatever the case is. But the cards themselves have little icons in the upper left and upper right corners that modify the values of the dice. So you may have the dice in a way that you want them that satisfies the card, but when you install it, basically you play it down, it could reduce or increase the value of either die on either side and throw off your plans. So there's ways to mitigate that, but then again, you're spinning that plate while taking away from your ability to have an area majority, which leads into the set collection. It's a really nice, solid, thinky, classic J. Alex Kevern design. If you enjoyed things like World's Fair 1893, it's right up your alley.
Oh, awesome. I love that game. So I wasn't sure, because, like, the theme, like, was, like, something about robots, and, like, the art was great. It had this, like, pink cover and, like, this robot lady on the front, and I was like, oh, it's really attractive, but then, like, that theme made me nervous that it wasn't going to be my kind of game. But hearing that, like, it sounds like it'd be more up my alley, and I'm a big Alex Kevern fan, so
yeah, I would
check that out.
I would say it's definitely not as thematic as World's Fair. Like, World's Fair felt more like the theme was integral to the gameplay than was Sentient. And from what I had heard, it was originally a completely different theme when he was first designing it. So I would say if the theme is suspect for anyone, definitely look past it, because it's really more about the mechanics of what you're doing in the game than anything thematic. Saying that is a bad thing, but
cool.
It's,
but the hook isn't the theme so much as, like, the gameplay.
Right. That'd be my opinion.
Awesome. Well, here's one of my highlights for sure. Like, Baron Park. Did you get to play this one?
Yep, I picked that one up and played it. That's a real solid one.
Oh yeah, it's by Phil Walker Harding, the guy who made Sushiko and Imhotep, and it's a tile laying game, so you have these Jenga-like pieces, kind of like Tetris-y or patchworky, but you have this zoo tile that you're starting with, and you get to draw a tile that you're going to place next turn. And the tile that you draw is based on whatever feature on the board you cover up. So it's like a 5x5 grid or something, and, like, there's different characters that are illustrated, they're essentially icons. And if you cover them up, they allow you to draw from this kind of draft board to plan your bear zoo. And there's lots of different ways of scoring, and kind of some end game conditions that are kind of an advanced variant that felt pretty essential, like, not too much to put the game over the top, just, like, ready to go out of the box. And it's tile laying, it was set collection, it was, like, multiple ways to score and kind of, like, decide how to fit these tiles together on your board in order to make the coolest bear park. Awesome game. It's really heavy, like, heavy as in, like, there's a lot of cardboard in this box.
Right.
But it played in, 30, 40 minutes the first time a bunch of us played it, and it took like 3 to 4 minutes to teach it. So like that was awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's very accessible, and there's been a rash of these kind of games, the kind of Tetronimo sort of trying to fit everything into the board kind of thing. Like your Cottage Garden or your Patchwork or those kind of games. So it's similar mechanically to those, but I would agree that the what they call the advanced with those goal cards is pretty integral to making the game feel really good, and it really doesn't add a ton of complexity to it.
For sure. Yeah, this was like I like Patchwork. I tried this. My wife likes Patchwork, so I thought like, hey, she likes to place tiles. This is going to be up her alley. So I ended up bringing that one home too.
Yeah.
Really, really fun one. Another highlight game for me was let me think here. A little game that we played called Tracks or Tricks. TRAXX. It's a German game where you have a little deck of cards, right? And these little dry erase boards.
Yeah, it's not a roll and write, but it's a flip and write, I guess you could say.
Right. Yeah, it's a spatial game with a marker where you're drawing a line and you can't cross over your line. And each card has a number of hexagons on it, and you're going to flip it over. And you have a starting spot. And you're trying to hit these numbers that are on your little board. Your board is kind of the same as everyone else's, except the numbers are different. Is that correct?
No, everything's the same except the starting position. So everybody starts in a different place.
Gotcha. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you start at a different place on the board, but you're trying to touch these certain hexes that have numbers because those are going to give you points. And if you're the first one there, you get full points. And is it half? You get half if you get there after someone else has already been to that number. So you're trying to weave your way around this board you flip these cards over. Everyone kind of makes their path, trying to hit as many different colored hexes that are on that card in a straight line or in a zigzaggy line without like boxing yourself out.
Right. Yeah. You want to try to get as much of the board covered as you can because every empty space that your line doesn't touch. Is worth negative points, so it's an interesting sort of pathfinding race kind of game a little bit. I would almost say, like everybody's trying to get to the bigger point values first, so they can get the full value. But it's not, since it's all rounded up and the points range from 2 to 10, I think it was. It's, you're not going to be completely blown out if somebody else gets the 10 and you don't. It's a really interesting, really, really fun little light little draw and flop and write game. We'll call it that.
Yeah. And this wasn't a new game. This is something that you've had for a while. And like knowing that I like this sort of game, I had asked you to bring it. So I was glad we got to try it.
Yeah, it came out, I think, around 2015, I think.
Okay.
And what hooked me onto it was it's by the designer of Quix.
Yeah, Stefan Bendorf, right?
Yeah, Stefan Bendorf.
I love Quix. I'm a big fan of that, so that has me, had me out the gate. So, very cool. Were there any kind of surprises for you, like things you weren't expecting to be like? That's one of the cool things about going to a convention is like you don't know what new publisher is going to be there that you've never heard of that's going to have a really cool game, or you don't know about a game maybe that wasn't announced and it's just suddenly there, or kind of little things like that. So do you have anything like that from Origins this year?
Yeah, it's a particular game, and it's also a particular booth. The booth was Lion Rampant Imports.
Yes.
And they had a bunch of Zachtrum Spielen and other kind of import publishers' titles.
Yeah, they're a Canadian distributor. They're like one of the three hobby distributors in Canada.
Yeah, and I didn't get the chance to talk to anyone from the booth, but I had never heard of them before seeing their booth at Origins. So I don't know if this is a new venture for them or if they've been there before and I just never noticed them.
I've never seen them at Origins before, but when I went to Chicago Toy and Game Fair like 5 years ago. We go every year, and that's what conflicts with BoardGameGeek.com or .com. but they were there, and that was my first exposure to them, and they had a few games, like some dexterity games and kids games, and but I hadn't really seen them much. And then when I started, you know, doing working with distribution with Green Couch Games, they're one of the companies that carries our stuff in Canada occasionally. So okay. I had heard of them, but like to have them show up at Origins, that was kind of cool because, like you said, like they have all those like these companies that like for us we'd have to import them, but it's just like what they carry there. So there was a lot of interesting titles there.
Yeah, I joked. I think it was just on Twitter. I joked how I clogged up their booth a few times because I was just going from title to title doing a BGG search. Like, I have no idea what this game is. They had so many games that I had never seen before.
What'd you get from that booth?
I only ended up getting one, and it was based on your recommendation, but it was Vampire Queen.
Yes.
Which I looked at. I looked at probably 5 or 6 times before you said something about it. I didn't even think about it when I saw it in the coupon book that they had it for 50% off or $5 off, whatever it was. It was only $10 to buy. But it's a Wolfgang Kramer card game, which looking at the cover and the theme, you'd be like, I wouldn't have even thought about it. But when you mentioned it was a Kramer game, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go take a look at it. And then with the coupon, it was just like, okay, I'll buy this for $5. How bad can it be? And I don't know. I really enjoyed it myself. I think there were some at the table that we played with because we played a 6-player game, 7?
Yeah, I think it was like 7 or 8.
Yeah, it was a big group. And I think some of the players might not have really enjoyed it, but it scratches my cards with numbers itch, which I have a real big problem. And I say problem, it's in air quotes, but like if there's a cards with numbers game out, I will probably buy it sight unseen. There's just something about the concept of a deck of cards. In some cases, there's other components along with it, but primarily the deck of cards that has just numbers and maybe some other iconography on it, and they're not like, you know, crazy multi-use cards that are resource generating or anything like that. It's just numbers and some symbols, and the amount of variability that you'll find in games like this, like Six Nymph or an Abluxin or a Tausch Rausch or a Dichtron, you know, all those kind of games. It's like they're all working with the same core of just cards with numbers, and yet there's so much fun that comes out of what these guys are able to do with these games. Yeah, Vampire Queen is, I felt it, part of the game is very similar to like an Abluxin, where the object is you play a set of cards. A set could be a single card or multiples of the same value. And you go around the table, and if you want, whoever plays the first set, the next player has to play a set of equal size but of higher value cards. So if I started off with a pair of sevens, then you would have to play a pair of eights or pair of nines or a value that's higher than the eights. And you go around the table, and whoever played the highest set, they get to go next on the next turn. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to shed your hand. You're trying to get rid of all the cards in your hand. And at first glance, with just that mechanic, it would be pretty light and not terribly much of a game. But there are two special cards that are Vampire Hunters. All the other cards are values 1 to 12, I think it was.
Right.
And then there's the two Vampire Hunters, which were like 15 and 20, I think it was. And when one of those gets played, they get played on their own. And actually, they're double-sided, so everybody knows who has the Vampire Hunters. But when one of those gets played, the game shifts. And instead of trying to play a set and play a higher set, you have to play a single card. And you're trying to play as low as possible, because whoever plays the highest value card ends up taking every card that was played, including the Vampire Hunters. And in a game where you're trying to shed cards from your hand, you don't really want to be taking anything. And if you're unlucky enough to keep the Vampire Hunter cards in your hand when someone goes out, they're worth significant points, and you don't want to score points. This is like a golf scoring kind of low score wins kind of game. But there's a lot of power in those two Vampire Hunter cards that it's not necessarily a bad thing if you take it mid game, because you can use that to your advantage strategically. I don't know. I thought it was great fun.
Yeah, I agree. That was a fun night. I think part of that was the group we were with, and it was late. That was the latest night for me at Origins. It was the last. It was like, you know, it got past midnight or something when we were playing that game.
No, I think it was 9:30. I don't think it was actually that late.
Whatever. But yeah, like the same thing, you know, like the Wolfgang Kramer caught me, and essentially it's a climbing game. I like climbing games. Tissue, clubs is probably the lightest version of that. Ladder 29 is a climbing game with a twist. And in this, Wolfgang Kramer also did a Bluxen. So like this was an earlier game. It came out before, a Bluxen with a different name, right? It's been around for a while.
Vampire Queen came out in 2016, and that's a reimplementation of Ox and Essel, which came out in 2008. Which the chain of reimplementations kind of goes back farther. There's actually one with some very, very unique and distinct artwork that I have on. It's on its way to me as we speak.
Yeah, look it up, and you guys can see some really interesting artwork, and the earlier versions of this game are pretty hilarious.
Yeah, so I cannot wait to have that one in my quiver for Gen Con.
I'll definitely play that again. But it was a fun game, and I really just enjoy like throwing cards with a big group of people. We were having some laughs. We were kind of, you know, like trying to make the best plays we could and trying to figure out who we needed to hose with all the cards and, you know, a lot of trash talking and going back and forth. And it just felt like something about those cards with, you know, numbers games, like bring out this like very classic feeling, you know, like they just like, and I love the innovation too. Like how many people have made such great games with just a bunch of numbers, and that's exciting to me too. So,
yeah. And they hit a real sweet spot because they have fresh, you know, mechanisms to them, but they're also extremely accessible. Like if I'm going to a family gathering or something, and you know, it's a group of people I've played games with previously, but not very frequently, and they're definitely not gamers by any stretch. Like I feel pretty confident being able to pull out like a Dijkstraan or a Six Nymph and be able to teach it to almost anybody. And it's accessible. There's enough meat to it to make it interesting, but it's not too heavy that you can't just sit there and, you know, have a good time and joke and, you know, table talk and just, you know, it have fun with it, you know,
for sure. And then after that, we got to, Ben Pinchback was playing with us, and he had his production copy of Wasteland Express Delivery Service, and they broke out. Like, we were looking at the production quality and all these miniatures and this ridiculousness. And
it's the total
opposite. Like, it was like this.
It's another light filler. Another light filler that weighs probably about 30 pounds, maybe.
And I'm sure people are going to love that game, but I just love like the night and day thing. Like we played some cards and we had a great time. And then it was like, look at this brick of a game. And it looked amazing. And it was like, it's so cool. Like the gamut of what is available in this tabletop hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that when I first started going to Origins, Origins of my first convention, and it was around five or six years ago. It was 2012, I think, was my first one. And I had an inkling of what kind of games were going to be at this thing. But, you know, looking back and looking at it now where I'm at, it's like there's just so much great stuff that's out there in this hobby that, you know, if you don't like one thing, just keep looking because there's something out there for everybody.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, at that Lion Rambits booth, to go back to that, like that's where I got my some presents to bring home to my kids. I got the Enchanted Tower, which is made by the same publisher that made the Magic Labyrinth, which won the Kinderspiel back in 2009 or so.
Is that Ravensburger?
It is not. They're called it's the same people who make Cockroach Poker and stuff. They're called Dre Majorspiele.
Yeah, that nailed it. Yep, you nailed. I don't what.
yeah. But it's a little game with a magnet thing, and you're hiding a little key, and you're rolling dice, and one group is the adventurer, and one person is the evil wizard, and you're trying to find the key first so you can go and unlock the princess that's locked in the tower, and it has a little popping mechanism, but there's six places you can put the little metal key in after you find it, and if you don't get the right one, it doesn't pop. But my kids are going nuts for that. We've played that a bunch since I got home, and then I got a tin of Ghost Blitz Spooky Doo that adds a fez that you put on some of the different wooden tokens and some new cards. So they had some really interesting, fun stuff at that booth. So that was that was a cool surprise to me too. And they had a big spread too. They had a big booth.
Oh yeah, and they had tons of stuff for demo. I probably should have spent more time there, demoing some of the things that I'd never heard of before. There was I'm gonna blank on the name of it, but it was a dexterity kind of game where there's these wooden cylinders, and each player had a particular color of cylinder.
Oh,
and
that's Via Paletti. That was the Spielajar
yes,
winner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yep. And, that's a fun one.
Yeah. They need. I want them to come back. Yeah. And I want them to keep bringing stuff, and I want them to let us know some of the stuff they might be bringing, so that way I don't feel bad standing there in their booth going on BGG saying, okay, what is this game? What's this? All right, is there rules? Let me read about it. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get out of your way.
Right. Well, one of my surprises was kind of some stuff at the Tasty Minstrel Games booth. They had a bunch of titles that I had never heard of before, and I think I didn't really study the Board Game Geek Origins preview or anything. But, they had games I didn't know that they were doing, and one of them that I brought home was called Okie Dokie, and it was just a cute numbers on cards kind of co-op game that has, a music theme and animals or something. I didn't play it yet, but I wanted it, and I had to have it because it was cute, and it was Tasty Minstrel, so I know they have a level of quality that they, stick with when making a game. Another one I got from them was a new dice game called Dairyman, and then they had some others that I didn't pick up, which I wish I had. They do a new version of Guns and Steel, which was a game that I played the year that I first played Walk on Fire when Eric Martin came home from Tokyo Game Market. And it was a really meaty little card game.
I had that one in my hands, and I was looking at some of the cards, and I'm like, this looks really interesting. And I didn't end up pulling the trigger on it, but...
Yeah, it's a neat game, and I just remember I was really glad to have somebody teach me that game, and it felt hard to my brain and my game style because it was a very thinky kind of puzzly thing because there was so many different choices. But it's a game that I'd like to revisit at some point. And then they have another one called Samara too, which is a little time track worker placement game that I wish I would have got, but I didn't, and I think that's not out in stores yet.
Yeah, I think all of those titles you've listed were soft launching them at Origins in limited quantities. So I wouldn't be surprised if those make another appearance at Gen Con.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll have to keep my eyes open for that for sure, because I thought that they looked like they had some neat, fun, kind of different stuff than what, you know, they've had in the, you know, not just these giant Euro games. And,
right.
And they do some really solid small games, and I always make sure to check those out. So
yeah, I'm a sucker for cards with numbers, but I'm also a sucker for small games that pack a lot of punch to them. So like the Guns and Steel, things like your Castles of Burgundy, the card game.
Right.
Those also scratch an itch for me too, where it's like there's a lot of game in this small deck of cards kind of thing. Heavier kind of stuff than like a six nymph or something.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do like kind of a speed round of some more like highlight games without like going into them. Maybe name some other stuff that you played that you enjoyed. Do you have anything, like, can you go down a list from your memory bank there?
Yeah. I enjoyed playing, lost it. Pit Crew,
okay.
From, Stronghold. It's a real time cooperative. You're literally playing a pit crew in a race.
Nice.
That one is really fun and exciting. I played a really, really unique game that was available at the Lion Rampant booth, but Safranito.
Oh, which is, yeah, that's the spice flipping one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very, very unique dexterity game with a market economy in it.
Awesome.
Like it's a combination I'd never thought of before, but it was actually surprisingly good. Some of the they weren't new games for Origins, but I always enjoy getting to play First Class, All Aboard the Orient Express.
Yeah, that was you taught me that. That was the first game I played that wasn't one of my own games, and I thought that was cool. Like it was a nice game.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of modules that I still haven't had the chance to try that can really mix things up a bit. Those are probably a lot of the highlights.
Cool. I played Honshu again, which I still very much like. Codenames Duet was there to demo, and that's the new cooperative Codenames. We played a couple games of that together, and to be honest, like I don't think I need it. I enjoy Codenames and Codenames Pictures, and like this added a couple layers that felt confusing when we were trying to like. I don't know, it just didn't seem as clean of an experience to me. Not to, like, you know, rag on it. Like, Codenames is a great game, and it gives you more cards to add into your regular Codenames. And if you love Codenames, it's definitely worth trying.
I think, and I could be completely off base, I have nothing to base this on, but I got the sense that it's kind of like a more advanced two-player style of Codenames. Like, sure. I know there's two-player rules to play regular Codenames, but this felt like they were trying to make something a little meatier, something a little more substantial of a two-player experience.
Yeah, for sure. What else? We played a Haba game. I got a Haba game for my kids that was a fun little game called Rabbit Rally, where you're like trying to estimate distances between stones that like you're kind of building a makeshift bridge to get your bunnies from one place to another. My kids have really liked that one.
Yeah, Haba does good stuff. They really churn out a lot of great kids games that aren't just like silly, simple, light stuff. They really do a good work with making games that are accessible and fun for kids that are still thinky, you know, making them think in ways that'll help their brains grow.
And they've been perfect for our family. Like as my oldest kid gets a little bit older, like we still enjoy playing those with the 4-year-old. So like they're like growing and kind of being passed on to the younger kid, and like she's excited, just as excited as my 8.5-year-old was when she was playing them when she was 4. So that's a cool company that's doing really neat stuff.
Yep.
What about let's just talk about like what are some things that did you buy anything that you haven't got to play yet that you're looking forward to? What are a few of those? What are you most excited about?
Basically, almost. Well, I actually surprised myself this year. I actually played a good amount of things that I bought at the convention. There's quite a bit that I bought that I have not played yet. I picked up the standard edition of Yokohama from TMG.
Okay.
I really want to play that one. I stocked up on some Passport Studios titles that I had thought about before, but I had not pulled the trigger on. I picked up the CV expansion. I also picked up the Civilizations game.
Oh, yeah. That one's cool.
Yeah. There's more. I took a picture of my haul to put on Instagram, and a lot of the games are still on my floor where I left them for the picture. I'm not good at putting things away, Jason. I will admit it.
I'm looking at a stack in front of me on my table that's next to a stack over on the counter of games I had to move to clean off my table so I could put my new Origins games on it. So it's cool. It's totally okay.
At least they're on a table. Mine are literally on the floor. And I could pick them up and put them someplace. I really could do that. It's not that hard, but I don't know.
There's always tomorrow. There's always tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm kind of a hot mess most of the time.
Maybe
anyway,
another trip to IKEA, you know, another Kallax shelf or something.
No, I can't. Like, my apartment is just full. But I can't stop. I have problems, Jason. I have problems, okay?
It's okay. We all are in the same boat, typically. And I'm contributing because I keep making games that I want people to add to their piles, and I'm kind of proud of that, you know? You can at least find a places for my small games to squeeze them in so you feel
right,
a little less guilty.
Right, thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem, So a few that I'm excited about that I haven't played yet that I came home with that I was like, I would need to get this so I can play it when I get home because it looks like it's up my alley. I got Perlock Holmes by Stephen Sauer with awesome art by Jackie Davis, one of the best in the biz, and it looks to be a very cool little game. I got Veggie Garden from Quick Simple Fun Games and Celestia, also from Quick Simple Fun Games, kind of a pressure luck game that I've been meaning to go after. Right before I left for Origins, I was excited to get games from my friend Mark Spector in the mail. I got Unreal Estate and Stroop, which are both by designers that are friends of mine, and the publisher who are, you know, is a friend of mine, and artists who are friends of mine. So, like, that was a cool thing for his launching of the Grand Gamers Guild. And then also Helena Capel's Kids Table Board Gaming. I just got Problem Picnic, Attack of the Ants, the new Scott Olms Dexterity game. So, like, I have plenty of games to get to the table this summer, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and you're going to get them all played before Gen Con, right?
Oh, of course. Of course. I'm going to have to load some of these into the car for the camping trip this weekend. So
there you go.
Make sure that we, find some time to squeeze some games in around the rock and roll concerts and stuff that will be happening all around us.
That sounds like a perfect place to do it.
Oh, I know, right? Totally. That means no games are getting played, doesn't it? Shoot!
If anybody can pull it off, it's you, Jason.
Thanks for your vote of confidence, my friend. other things I did, I sold games. People love Rocky Road, A La Mode. We sold a bunch of those, and the new reprint of Best Treehouse Ever. People were excited about that, and we were demoing Outlawed a bunch, and the people who get it, and I love watching people's faces, you know, kind of click when they start to see how that game works together. And then I was able to start giving out some preview copies to some reviewers of our next Kickstarter game by Daryl Andrews and Adrian Adamskew, Before the Earth Explodes, and got a couple games in of that. It was a good Origins. So I'm kind of shifting gears now, working towards Gen Con and launching a Kickstarter in August for Before the Earth Explodes. And kind of wrapping up, you know, development and stuff like that on that game.
Do you know if you have a table at Gen Con? Because if not, I know where you can get them.
Oh, yeah, the table. Thank you for driving me to the store to get a table, because I realized I didn't have enough tables for the space that I was allotted for Origins. But I have tables for Gen Con. I know what to plan for Gen Con now. So I couldn't do it without you, Chris.
If not, I'll scout out the local Walmarts just in case we have to make another trip out for supplies.
Thanks, man. What'd I do without you? You know, with your In-N-Out fancy valet parking and stuff.
You probably would have found the table someplace else, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe.
It wouldn't have been nearly as fun as going to Walmart and
right
trying to herd you back to the cash register. Just stop with the beef jerky and everything.
You need what you need. You never just come for a table.
No, I know, but
awesome. Well, hey, Chris, thank you so much for kind of reflecting a little bit on the Origins experience with me. Hopefully we'll maybe get to do this.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime, man. We'll have to do this again after Gen Con or something.
That sounds like a plan.
And maybe we can talk about, we'll do a show where we talk more about those pesky words. Numbers, what is it? Cards with numbers games.
Cards with numbers. There are games with words on cards, but these are primarily numbers on cards, Jason.
That's a different podcast altogether, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, where can people track you down on Twitter if they want to interact with you or play games with you at Gen Con so they can tweet at you and be like, let's play one of your millions of games that you just bought?
You can find me on Twitter at the Copac, COPAC.
Yes.
That's generally the best way.
Awesome.
Or if you're at a convention, just stand up and yell out Copac, and I will likely hear it and respond.
There you go. Awesome. Hey, you can track me down on Twitter at Jason Kotarski or at Green Couch Games. You can check out greencouchgames.com for more podcasts and for cool little games. You can join our Facebook group, the 20 Minutes of Filler group, where we give away stuff and talk about these great little games that we love. And we just appreciate you for listening. Tell us, if you were at Origins, what were your highlights in the Facebook group? Tell us games that you wished you could have played, and what games make you feel most like you've eaten at the wonderful Melt Grilled Cheese Sandwich Restaurant in Columbus, Ohio. That's random, but just do it. That means you listened, and you have something strange to say.
You make a valid point.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed. I didn't support the Melt Army this year.
I did make my way over there with Josh Mills. No one else was around at the time. But Melt, eat it if you like cheese and gluten. But if not, I apologize. But you know, we still love you and can be friends.
Also eat it if you hate your body.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Only get a half sandwich. You don't need a whole sandwich.
No, you need a whole sandwich.
I guess you
don't think you do, but. You do.
We'll just agree to disagree on that one then, my friend. Hey, folks, until next time, get out there and play some great little games.